Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 6, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the planet. I'm Chris
Cosenza. And I'm Scott
Long. And I'm glad to be here.
I was going
to
say, you're back finally. I didn't know I was ever going to see you again.
You know, the guys in the home game up in Connecticut have no idea this happened, but I was stuck in Connecticut for another 48 hours.
Was Dan Rather there?
Yeah. Woke up, they said the flight was delayed. Actually, the first flight was canceled because of all that white powdery stuff that didn't go on donuts very well. I don't know what the hell it was, but brutally cold. This is my vow. Will not return to Connecticut in the cold unless someone dies. I am done. You know, I said to everybody up there, I used the joke all week. I said I'd return to Connecticut when hell froze over, and apparently it did. Not happy at all with the weather. And so then the next day, they're like, oh, we have you on a flight to Cincinnati and then a connecting flight to Tampa. And so we were supposed to be home at 11 o'clock in the morning on Monday. Instead, they give us a flight on Tuesday. And then when we woke up that morning, the initial flight was delayed 35 minutes, which would have made us miss our connecting flight in Cincinnati, which made us stay there till midnight.
Oh my gosh.
So we're like, well, can we just take, is there another flight on the next day? And they're like, oh, the same flight that you were supposed to be on is open on Wednesday. Well, can we have that flight? Okay. So we ended up being there exactly 48 hours longer than we wanted to.
Wow.
Should have got another makeshift home game together or something.
There you go.
Make up for the time.
But, sure, turn that lemonade into lemons. Or the other way around.
So in my time, my extra time there, I made a straight flush and won the jackpot while I was there.
Really?
Yeah. That's the good news. The bad news is it was on my video poker game on my iPhone. So I don't really get anything for it.
Oh, but you get the satisfaction of knowing that you got a straight flush.
Yeah, I was dealt a flush, but I was open-ended for a straight flush, so I threw it away and got the King of Spades.
Ding, 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 ding.
The guy sitting next to me on the plane was real happy for me.
Well, you see, you got that.
I got an extra bag of peanuts.
Yeah, yeah. You should ask the flight attendant for something more. Well, the wings from the pilot, or, you know, get to sit in the pilot's lap or something.
Well, you and I had polar opposites, I guess, of vacations. You were on a cruise on a beautiful boat going to beautiful beaches, and I was looking at the most pure white beaches known to man. Better known as the mega storm that hit the New England northeast.
Oh man, yeah, and I tell you, it's the first time I got on a cruise, and I overpacked, which people, you know, almost always do on cruises. But the reason I overpacked was this first time I've been on a cruise in February.
Yeah,
and it was not your typical cruise weather. In fact,
nippy.
I packed all sweaters, and my wife was laughing at me until about 4 o'clock when I had my sweater on, and I'm like, yeah, I'm toasty.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of crazy, but you know, I went on one of these poker cruises, first time I've been on one of them. And it probably wasn't a traditional poker cruise, I guess I should say, you know, like those big ones you see advertised, the card player cruises
or right.
WPT cruises. This was a smaller one, you know, a little 3-day jaunt for one of our local free poker leagues here, the WPT APL.
Right.
And so it was interesting. I was glad I went. You know, it was a good cruise for those folks who enjoy going to play in the free leagues at night. For folks like you and me, and probably a lot of our listeners that like to play for some cold hard cash.
Right.
Not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much. So they won a big tournament, but you know, I made the final table and got my money back. Which is better than not making the final table and not getting my money back.
Hey, yeah, you'd rather break even than be broken. So
exactly. They didn't have a lot of side games, which is what I always thought that they would have on these ships, and I think some of these other ones probably do. They had a couple $20 to $40 side tournaments, and you know, to be honest, I just kind of avoided those. But you know, I did go to your favorite table, the lovely Carnival Sensation Poker Pro table. $1, $2 no limit, and gotta tell you, I'm not a fan of these machines, as we've said, but I scored a little on those.
Yeah, because you don't have to pay a tip, and you don't have to, you know, although you do have to pay the rake. So.
But you have a lot of these players, and I'm not trying to pick on them, because they love playing in these free poker leagues, but they're not really used to playing $1, $2, no limit, and sat down, and wow.
So your cruise
ching, 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 ching.
Are you saying that your cruise is free?
No, I wish I could say that. I did not play as much as I probably should have in those. But, you know, the other thing that's it's interesting about these poker pro machines is you just swipe your little sale and sign card, it just keep adding money.
Yeah.
That's so dangerous.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
I mean, it's awesome for people like me that, you know, I swiped it once for my $100 and that was it. But
yeah.
But instead of watching people, you know, oh, yeah, he just called all in with Queen 4 again. Oh, my God, he's swiping a card again. Oh, my God, he's got 500 in front of him now. Oh, my God, he has zero in front of him again.
What was the buy-in? Like, was it 100 or was it more?
You know, I didn't even ask. I mean, I just I swiped my card for 100. I just that's what I normally do for a 1-2 no limit game. You know, because I'm trained here in Florida. That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
And but I think some people bought in for like 60.
Okay.
Or maybe even less than that. So I don't know. They may not have had any minimum at all.
Could you bought in for more? Is what I was wondering.
Oh, that's a good question too. Yeah, I think so. Because I think some people actually bought in for more than that.
Wow.
But, I don't know. But yeah, then I played the blackjack tournament, and I used to play these a lot before I get into poker.
This is a poker show, Scott.
Yeah, but you know, I
better have a lesson to
I
be
almost,
learned.
It was an extremely strategic tournament for me. In fact, my wife was even impressed, and it's hard to impress her when you're me. but you know, it's not a great blackjack tournament. It's one of those where you know, you have some qualifying rounds, and then the five people with the, or six people with the most chips come back and play the finals at 5:05.
Yeah.
And so I played one, and I tied for the lead.
Wow.
8,000.
Impressive.
Yeah, it was impressive. Thank you very much. So I came back to the final table, and at the final hand, I was tied with some other guy, a real sharp poker player from the APL, and I had to act first, and I bet the minimum, and... everybody else bet the maximum, and the dealer just could not hit 21.
Oh, brutal.
Boom, gone, just like that. I went from first to fourth. I didn't even get one of the little carnival hats, because I didn't finish in the top three. But
so what was the poker lesson?
Well, you have to think about your bet sizes.
Position is everything.
I mean, the poker lesson is that a lot of these players in this were blackjack players and not tournament players. And it's just like in poker, you do weird things in poker and tournaments that you wouldn't do in cash games.
Right.
And that's exactly the same thing where you have to play these blackjack tournaments. You have to, you know, bet a minimum or double down on 19 or do some other kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So, but we're back on the dry land now.
Clearly, there were no MIT guys on the boat.
No, there were no card counters. At least none in the tournament.
To follow the polar opposite theme, you were playing with people who didn't know what they were doing, and I was playing with quality Anti-Up Nationals.
Yes.
Jason didn't tell me this, but apparently it was a prerequisite that you had to be named Tom, Brian, or Chris to play in this home game. Because that's all the people named, except for Blasman and Jason, pretty much, and Ben. There was like, everybody there was named Chris, Brian, or Tom. So we had a real good time.
But those are all rare names, so it is kind of a weird thing to get, you know.
But they're all pretty good players. We played a lot of, No Limit Crazy Pineapple. They called Double Flop, and we played a lot of Omaha 8.
Which, yes. Yeah.
I didn't do bad in it.
See, this is my dream home game here.
Yeah, I know it. What happened, we had a $20 tournament with $10 rebuys? No, $20 rebuys. And I didn't rebuy. I had my original stack, and then I had a pretty decent hand just before the rebuy period. So I had my original stack and then a little bit more. Some guys rebought a few times, and it was fun. We had a lot, and I got knocked out somewhere midway through the tournament. I almost got someone that laid down pocket nines when I shoved with ace five suited in the blind. So then I went and joined the cash game. We had some fun over there. And when the tournament was over, we all gathered around. And, you know, I go back to get my coat at the end of the night. And under the table at the cash game table that we started was the nine of spades.
Oh, no.
And I said, that's it. I want all my money back because I had lost like $9. I was like, I want all my money back because clearly I needed that nine of spades earlier to make the winning hand. And it was on the ground. We got a good chuckle out of that. But so I won my $20 back from the tournament. So I was even heading into the last hand of the night, and we were playing Pineapple, right? So I had been folding. And you know what? I'm not going to do one of those epiphanies or anything, but I'm really tired of the way I play. I'm starting to see the lay. I'm going to be like Jean-Rierre Belland and lose a quarter of a million before I learn how to really play this game. I'm just getting tired of folding all the time. So it was the last hand of the night, and I looked down at it. Now, remember, it's pineapple. So I looked down at Jack 9-7, and the Jack was suited.
That's a monster in pineapple.
Yeah. I said, all right, I'm going to play. It's the last hand of the night, you know, but we're playing at no limit. So the flop comes Jack 10-3. So I said, all right, and I think I had a backdoor diamond draw or something. So I was like, all right, I got top pair, but everybody was in almost because it was the last hand of the night. So I wasn't going to get crazy and bet out in pineapple. So I checked.
You weren't going to get crazy in pineapple?
Yeah. So I think it was Jason who bet a little bit, not a lot. And mostly everybody folded. I think one person called, so I called. The turn was another 10. So now I got Jackson 10s with a 9 kicker. My flush is gone. So I checked to him, and I think he bet, but he may have checked, you know. And because now it's Jack 3, 10, 10.
And one of your nines are gone, too.
Yeah,
it's under your coat.
I'm just screwed. Yeah, nine's in the other room, so which actually had nothing to do with the cash game there. But it was we had an earlier cash game that it affected. But anyway, so anyway, he bets a little bit. Like someone folds, I call. And the river's another 10. So now I've got the boat with, you know. But, you know, I'm not greedy. I'll be happy to take the small pot here and split it with him, you know. I check to him, and he bets $5. And I'm like, you really got quads on the last hand of the night to make me, you know, make me a loser, you know? And of course, yes, I know I'm loser all the time. But sure enough, I call his $5 and he had 10-3.
Oh,
so
wow.
He had tens full of threes and then turned to quads. And of course, my boat was no good.
Wow.
And that's what made me a $9 loser on the night. But it was a great time. Had a lot of fun. Glad they, I really appreciate when those guys get together and we have a little home game. And of course, Blasman, you know, went broke about 25 times because he always buys in short, you know. Oh, but he had his video camera there, and I think he's going to do something with it.
May have already done action. Yep,
yeah, so it was good. We had a lot of fun, good times. It was cold, of course. Left there around 2:30 in the morning, and it was like 17 below zero. So hopefully I gave somebody my cold while I was there.
Well, it's always fun playing with the Annie Up Nationals, and yeah. My wife and I just booked our trip to Chicago in May, so I'm hoping closer to then we can I'll be able to meet up some good folks up there.
At the Billy Goat?
At the Billy Goat, and hopefully actually have some time to play poker this time, because she's actually going to a concert without me, so
all right.
I'm going to be a free agent for one night.
All right. Hey, whatever you guys do up there in Chicago, don't let them drink Bush Light. You're going to play with them.
No, they know I'm going to drink Old Style. So it's, unfortunately, last week we had to, because of our travel, we had to record the show before the Apes free roll.
Mm, that's right.
And did not get to talk about it. And I tell you, as soon as I sat down at your table, actually not as soon as, probably 5 minutes later when we were no longer at the same table, yeah. I had wished, just for the sake of being able to stick it in your stomach.
Yeah.
That like, we you know what?
You can try to rub it in, but you know what? You know what? You got three unbelievably miracle flops and doubled up and tripled up, whatever. I got screwed on back-to-back hands, and you know, it's like I know exactly what's going to happen in this hand. I play it perfectly and still get screwed twice on the turn because the Queen of Spades gives the guy who only has two outs against me, actually he had four because he had a pair of sixes in his hand too, but I mean I trapped him perfectly. I knew he didn't have aces. I knew he probably had queens or some sort of straightening cards, and I totally played the hand perfectly because I knew that Theron was going all in on my left and all these other guys would call because it would be a little bit much, and then I could really pop it with my double suited kings or whatever it was, and they still came along. It came along. How do you come along when I bake it pot and all you have is queen, queen, six, six? So the flop comes safe, and the turn was the Queen of Spades, which gives Theron an ice-high flush and now gives him one of his outs, the other guy his outs, to really cripple me. And then the next hand is the same exact thing. I flop two pair, and then I get counterfeited. And, you know, I played it well. I'm not saying that I played it perfectly. You should always, if you think that, then you're never going to improve.
That's
and whatever.
True. That's true.
But really, Scott. I mean, come on. Did you get your seat?
I did not.
All right, and, then. So that's all that matters.
But no, what is funny is that I show up at your table with 250 in chips. You had more than 3,000.
I know.
And boom, you're gone.
Yeah.
I actually got down to 85 chips at one point and built it back up to almost 2,000.
I know. And that was right when I got knocked out. You had like 1,200 or whatever, and I was like, oh my God.
But you're right. It doesn't matter because I didn't get a seat. So, but it's still fun to laugh at you. But the actual Apes 2 event is Wednesday night, 9 p.m. on PokerStars.com. Password, Antioch.
Pot Limit Omaha.
Yes, Pot Limit Omaha. That's very important to say.
Yes.
Very important to say. And, you know, our last winner, Event 1, we sent off that beautiful banana, handcrafted from Antioch plastic.
Yes.
And that beautiful PokerStars.com monkey, sewn by our own hands.
Yep.
To our winner. And no love, no photo.
What's going on?
Nothing.
What is the deal?
We're giving you free pub in the next magazine. No photo. Send it. That's all you gotta do.
Ship it.
But whoever wins Wednesday, we will get that off to you. And remember, send us a photo.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's going to be me.
Yeah, they're not going to make the issue now. Probably.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
better hurry.
But still, get it in so we can run you in the May issue. Anyway, I enjoyed myself in the free roll, even though I was sick, too. So I was trying to either double up or go home, and I went home. So
see?
Went to sleep.
Mission accomplished. You know, another mission accomplished is we had our Celebrity Apprentice draft last week.
Yay.
And it was a very spirited, because we're doing couples this year, so three couples. And, you know, I told you before that I was kind of let Annie Duke fly under the radar because I didn't think anybody knew her and tried to pick her up, get her on the cheap.
Yeah.
She went number one.
Yeah, because they listen to our show.
Yeah. No, they don't, actually. But yeah. So I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You're picking Annie Duke with the number one overall pick?
Yeah, that makes sense, Scott.
Yeah, so then we watched the show, and I imagine you were busy up in Connecticut shoveling snow or something.
Making snow angels.
And didn't watch it. But wow, what a... Are you going to bleep this out?
No.
Biatch. Oh, my God. I don't think anybody's a surprise. Everybody knew she was going to be a kind of a take charge, kind of in your face kind of woman, just like she is at the table. But oh my God.
I would never beep out the whitest man in America saying biatch. That baby is going in the vault.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much longer Ms. Duke sticks around, because she, I think, infuriated every single one of her teammates.
Shocking.
It's, you know, guys versus gals on this thing.
Isn't
and
it? Isn't it? Yeah.
And wow.
Shocking.
She belittled somebody by telling them how to frost a cupcake. In fact, that's going to be my new burns my toast. That's what frosts my cupcake. It's all going to be on her, Vandy Duke.
Oh, man. I tell you, when you saw her yell at Brett Youngblood in the World Series like 4 or 5 years ago, and they saw that and showed it on ESPN.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm sorry, I love him to death, but he's just wrong. And I'm like, all right, now we know. Because, you know, when they don't know the cameras are there and they show their true selves, that's when you can really make your decision about a person's personality. So I was, you know, I'm not shocked. Of course, you know, Trump probably loves that. You know,
that's all. Yeah.
Biatchy.
Well, I hope she sticks around for a little bit, just because she brings in a lot of poker players. Eric Seidel and a couple other folks made an appearance on this one. They came down to buy cupcakes from her. And I think everybody was impressed that, you know, Annie knows a lot of people with a lot of money. People don't really think poker players have a lot of money if you are, you know, on the D-list of Hollywood. So.
Very cool.
But, you know, cool.
She's a reality queen now, man. She's
got
her Best Damn show. She's got this one. She was on that One Versus 100. Man, she's making the rounds.
Yeah.
I want to see her on Survivor.
Ooh. Or could you see her, like, when she's hungry?
Have her and Helmuth do the what do you call it?
Wow.
The,
I don't think anybody wants to see Helmuth. Yeah, there we go.
That would be awesome. All right. It's time for the Annie Up News Desk.
More than 50 of the world's best poker players, a handful of celebrities, and a couple of lucky average Joes will face off starting today in NBC's annual National Heads Up Poker Championship at Caesars Palace out in Las Vegas.
I seem to have lost my invitation.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it. I don't know what's going on. Why wasn't I invited?
I declined. I told him, hey, Don Cheadle, you can take my seat. I know it means more to you than me. And he was pretty happy. I'm like, you know, just change the name of the Annie Up for Africa.
Yeah, yes.
It's still rubbing me the wrong way. But very quickly, you know, I probably don't have much time now, but I know Gambit's putting together a bracket for this, so by the time you're listening to this, it may be too late. But if not, check out the forums at annieupmagazine.com/forum.
Yep.
And maybe you can still get in. Also, Harrah's has announced that Milwaukee's Best will return this year as the official beer of the World Series of Poker.
It's like my mini Super Bowl. Because whenever they host it, they always have those cool, funny commercials.
Ah, yes.
You know, and that's why I pay attention. Because it's like
cans fall out of the sky and squish people.
Yeah, or Chris Ferguson stuck. Maybe they'll have him, like, you know, stuck in a you know, a Coleman, you know, little container or something this time. But really, I mean, it's, you know, usually I go, you know, in the ba-doop-ba-doop-ba-doop with the TiVo and fast forward through everything. But when the Milwaukee's Best light commercials are there and something's going to crush somebody's head, you know, because they're acting like a girl, you know, I pay attention to those things. Yeah. So I'm glad they're back.
Well, this is cemented the fact that I will not be the next champion because Busch Light is not the official beer. Two developments out of Texas. First, Part-Time Poker News says the owner of Pickup Poker Incorporated has sued the state, saying his business of setting up portable poker games where players deposit money with the company ahead of time and collect winnings afterwards should be legal. Also, Pokerati reports that the Attorney General has been asked to comment on the legal status of charity tournaments in the state.
Hmm.
Pickup Poker, I like this guy's concept. He's got like a big little, I don't know, like an Airstream or something, I don't know, and just drives it around, and then people have like a little debit card they load, and they walk in, and no cash, and totally cashless, and then they walk out.
Wow.
I can't imagine why he's being told that that's not legal. But hey, good luck to him, and also charity tournaments, come on. Wow. How can charity tournaments can't be legal?
I know.
It's charity. It's for the kids.
Charity.
Right. Yeah. All right, a Duke psychologist says a new study of chimpanzees shows that humans' desire to gamble can be traced back to our ancestors' willingness to take risk in hunting and foraging. They apparently set up some kind of like three-card Monty kind of shell game thing, and they put like multiple grapes under one of them and some, and the chimpanzees, you know, obviously are very smart because they're descended from humans, quickly figured out that it was worth the risk to go for the potential of the more grapes than the fewer grapes that they knew were going to be there.
Wow.
And then somehow they traced us all the way back to our ancestors.
So, like,
science is a wonderful thing.
When the T-Rex was coming at the caveman, which I know they lived like 3 million years apart, but for the funniness of this joke, I'm going to continue. So the T-Rex is chasing the guy, and he's like, all right, if I go this way, I can club the blonde-haired cave woman and drag her back to my cave.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I go that way, I can eat a brontosaurus burger.
Right.
And so he chose the riskier of the two, which is always going for the woman.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
And the T-Rex ended up eating him.
Right.
But it was still worth it.
Yes, exactly.
I get it now. Yeah, it's pretty funny how they can trace us back to playing three-card Monty with grapes.
And finally, Chris, a citizen who went to police headquarters in Oxfordshire, England, to report a burglary was asked by officers there if he was there for the poker game. When he said he wasn't, he was there to report a burglary. He was told he couldn't file his report.
What?
Apparently, the police department was closed for the night. And it goes on, this guy goes next door or across the street to another police station. How many police stations are there in England? And that one was also closed, and he eventually just had to phone in his burglary report.
Oh, my God.
Later on, of course, now the police are like, oh, no, well, you know, it wasn't because the cops were playing poker that he couldn't take the...
Yeah, right.
It was just because the police department was closed. So here's the thing. You know, I've been wanting to go to England a long time. I'm a little scared now, though.
Yeah, because you never know if the cops are on duty.
Yeah, some Jack the Ripper guy who apparently lives there is chasing me, trying to cut my throat, and I just happened to go to the police station with a poker game. They're not going to help me?
Oh, my God, that's hilarious. Yeah, come back later when donut time is over.
Maybe I can play him heads up, and then, you know, if I win, then I get to keep my head.
So apparently when the phone's ringing now, that could actually be somebody being trying to report a crime here instead of calling our hotline.
Ah, that's true.
So we better answer it quick. 813-448-1120. You call and we use that call. We may send you something pretty cute from our swag.
That's right. And, you know, the whole shaming people in with the trickery of our $10,000 World Series
worked
tonight,
really well.
Worked well. We got swamped by calls this week. In fact, we're going to put two on this week because they're both responding to something last week. But only one, Chris.
Can win the swag.
Can win the swag.
We'll have to vote on it later, maybe? I don't know.
We'll spin the prize wheel.
All right.
We'll alternate the names on the prize wheel. How's that?
Sure, it's virtual. We can do whatever we want.
All right, first one comes from Kevin in Asheville.
Kevin here from Asheville, North Carolina. I was just listening and heard the question about the home game structure and buy-in and blinds, and my best recommendation is what we do in our home game, which is just make it a limit game. If it's a friendly game among friends, many of whom aren't real serious about poker, limit is the way to go. It limits how much you can really reasonably lose in a night. People aren't going to get sick of losing 20, 30, 50 bucks a week. It keeps things going and keeps them social, and you can certainly work on your limit game even when other people aren't taking it real seriously. thanks a lot for a great podcast, guys, and take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, yeah. But you wouldn't fly in a limit game.
No, I wouldn't. But you would. Your game used to always be just limit, so
that's true. But, you know, I also wonder, I mean, I guess you don't get the big swings that you do in no limit. But you still could run up a pretty big bar tab in limit. So.
Sure. I mean, when I first joined the home game and all you guys played was limit, I used to go broke until I learned how to play. So, I mean, unless they know how to play that way, it could still add up. Absolutely. It's not going to keep you from having to buy in or whatever. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. But, well, it does keep your money on the table probably a little bit longer.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
All right, we got one more call about this. Brian from Tennessee.
Hey, guys. This is Brian from the great state of Tennessee. I wanted to call to comment on the person you had that talking about trying to control their game, you know, maybe with the blinds or the buy-in. Well, there was about 6 or 8 of us that played a pretty regular game for at least a year, once, twice a week. And, you know, normal buy-in was $20 or $40. And that we were all happy with that. And then all of a sudden, one of the guys invited a couple more buddies of ours that we were all friendly with. And instead of buying in with 20s, they started buying in with 100. And they were peeling them off left and right. And no one ever spoke up. And so it didn't take long for the game to just escalate. And I just wanted to pass along that if she or he wants to control their game, they better not wait. Once you get the group used to playing that high limit, it's very, very hard to go back down because we tried it, trying to lower the blinds or trying to lower the buy-in, you know, for just a good game. And every time it just blew back up. So.
Wow. I'd like to be a part of that. Although, you know, I guess our home game was kind of like that. I mean, we started out with little mini tournaments and not that much of a buy-in. Although, I guess you guys, before I came along, had played a higher limit.
Yeah, actually, the first game we ever played was 4-8.
Yeah, that's crazy. Just,
we don't play anything like that now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when the crux of most of the people who played in our game now, we mostly played a smaller limit. We played, like, small tournaments. And all of a sudden, it boomeranged in 2-4, and then all the games and stuff. So we didn't get out of hand. We were comfortable with it. But I could see it getting out of hand with this other home game. You know,
yeah, and it makes sense that, you know, once you get used to something, you're not going to want to dial it back and
rein them in now,
because there's obviously somebody winning at every poker game. It's, you know, you don't get a whole lot of poker games where everybody loses.
That's right.
So, but interesting,
rein them in while you can. keep the limits low if that's what your goal is.
All right, Kevin and Brian, we thanks for that great advice for Jen, and now let's spin the wheel, see who gets the swag. And our winner is Brian from Tennessee. So, Brian, send me your address. Email it to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And let's spin the wheel one more time. And you win a flush card protector from PokerFaces.tv. So, very good, Brian. Get that address off to us. And everybody else, again, the call number is 813-448-1120. And we're going to have to be very selective here because we got a lot of good calls.
A lot of calls.
But don't let that stop you from calling. And
yeah, they were making,
be competitive.
They were making fun of you at the home game when I was playing this week for that call. I was like, yeah, Scott sometimes has some interesting ideas. And but it worked, so.
Yeah.
Kudos. Kudos, buddy.
All right, the mailbag is overflowing too, Chris.
You get to read it then.
Yeah, and this one is comes from Chris from Ohio. And it's a very long one, but I'm not going to read it all, but I want to get the essence of it because it's kind of sweet in a way.
All right.
Can we say sweet? Mm. Poker Player's going to let me say sweet?
I said cute earlier, so
okay.
I'm really regretting that now.
Wow, but we're very metrosexual on today's show. All right, so anyhow, Chris is responding to, we did a show before talking about setting goals and making poker predictions way back at the beginning of the year, and he wrote back just to kind of relay his story of how he really wanted to, he listens to the podcast on his Microsoft Zune, he wanted to buy his wife one because she really likes it, but they were on a strict budget for Christmas this year, and the wife controls all the money, probably a smart thing.
Nothing shocking about that.
So there's no way he was going to be able to sneak some money out and buy this thing for him, but he was able to sneak out $30 to play in a charity poker tournament, won enough money to buy his wonderful bride, a Zune, and so she's very happy. It doesn't say whether she's complaining about not getting an iPod and getting a Zune instead. And, of course, it made her feel better that, you know, he won it with his poker winnings.
Right, instead of
so then
dealing.
He turned off and went into Full Tilt, and he said he ran played Apes tournaments for a while, ran out of money, and then since then had been playing with his points much more successfully than I was.
Of course.
And he had a bunch of chances in the $200 buy-in tournaments.
Ooh.
Did pretty well. And, you know, he took some money out, and then now, Chris, though, now he's really setting the bar high. He wants to win motorcycles.
He wants to win motorcycles.
And, you know, he's doing it on the cheap. He's into doing these points and then working his way up and not putting money in. And he's hoping that in about 6 months, he will be sending us yet another email.
Wow.
Live from the hog.
Wow, that's a goal, huh? Winning,
yeah.
Winning a hog. That's cool.
You know, we all talk about how you need to have goals, and wow. That's a good one.
Do you have any goals for your poker playing?
Just to be able to keep playing until I die.
Yeah, all I want to do is just be able to play. I've given up goals. I just like to play, you know, knowing that I can go to Connecticut and play in a home game and not worry about whether or not I lose or win, or, you know, just have some fun. My goals are just to play.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you, as easy as it is to get money in on PokerStars now, you know, I just clicked a button the other day. Boop.
Yeah.
That doesn't really bode well for being strict with the discipline. But we'll see.
All right, let's spin the wheel.
Oh, and Chris, you got a lovely set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com.
Is there a card for if you're trying to win a motorcycle, play this hand this way, I wonder?
That might be a good idea for our good friend Nick at GreatPokerHands.com to come up with.
Yeah,
it's a motorcycle set.
It's a motorcycle set.
Yeah.
If you're playing for a hog and you're sitting in seat two.
All right, well, Chris, email me your address, and we'll get those wonderful cards right out to you. And everybody else, again, podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Okay, it's time to solve the mystery of the overturned kayak.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 minute mystery. The case of the overturned kayak. We are playing the 8-game mix on Stars, and it's the Pot Limit Omaha rotation.
Better to stick with what you know.
In this hand, I'll be in the small blind, a difficult place to be in PLO. But remember, since this is a rotation game, we are only six-handed. Fold, call, and I look at 10 of clubs, 10 of spades, king of hearts, 7 of spades. Okay, far from a great hand, but it's half a bet with no raise, and we do have set value. Since I don't expect a big blind to try and steal 3 big bets, I simply call. Big blind calls. Pot is 4 big bets, and 4 players see a flop. 4 of clubs, 10 of diamonds, queen of diamonds.
Glad I had that cup of coffee.
Bingo, we hit our set, but of course we have no valid redraws. So my strategy here, when this happens in PLO, is to try and keep the pot small until a blank falls on the turn. At this moment, I may even be a dog to the existing draws. I check, 2 other checks, and our big blind bets out 3/4 of the pot. Now, in PLO, this screams I want action, but nevertheless, I'm willing to call here at this point. I'm reading/hoping that my fellow checkers are not looking for a check raise and are simply going to tag along or leave. I call, our 2 tag-along checkers fold, and the pot is now 10 big bets. When the turn pairs the board with a queen of spades. Now, that's a pretty good card, but not a perfect card. We have the current 4th nuts, and now the diamond redraw is no longer a concern. I don't think it's overly surprising here that I'm going to bet pot, but what may be overly surprising is our big blind immediately calls. The pot is now 30 big bets, and we find ourselves with only 28 big bets now behind in our stack. The river is the jack of diamonds. Now, what's your action?
Well, first of all, I am folding pre-flop here. Am I too tight?
Yeah, you're probably too tight. I mean,
are you serious?
No,
we've got a pair of tens, a king.
Yeah.
That's not even flushed with our cards, and a seven.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, you know, you're probably right.
And I know we're in the small blind, but, I mean, Colombo made a good point. That's the worst place to be in Parliament, Omar,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is. And the other thing, too, is while I was snowed in to the Great White North, I actually made my way down to the bookstore, and there was a Farhan Omaha was there. And I was just thumbing through it, and he just talked about how this is just a crap hand, really, and how he wouldn't even consider playing it. He won't even consider playing queens.
Yeah, exactly.
He barely wants to play kings in his hand, and something like 10-10 king 7 is just pure trash, whether you get the discount to come in or not. But, I mean, I understand that, and we always talk about, like, in the hand of the week, I say I would have folded pre-flop, so I can't be held responsible for anything.
Exactly.
I say after this. Same with this hand. I mean, yeah, I may have gotten away from this hand, but maybe not. If I'm playing a cash game, you know, you could flop a big hand.
No, but here's the thing. What is the big hand you flop? Now, Colombo talks about you've got set potential.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst thing I think you want to get.
Yeah. Well, what are you hoping
because
for? Because
sets
Queen,
are
Jack,
so vulnerable to this, and it has to be the top set. So, I mean, so yeah, I would think the best. I'm hoping to flop Broadway here.
Yeah.
If I don't get that, I mean, I guess I still got, a 10 of spades and 7 of spades, so I've kind of got a straight flush draw there.
Yeah, right.
But aside from that, you know, the set, I think, is just going to get me in trouble, and I think that's what we found out in this hand.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Welcome back. Well, is that the worst card that could come? Probably. Are we committed already? Probably not. This is a cash game, though, and I don't need to play survival. Okay, let's examine his range and what hands beat us. The hand started with a button call, a flop bet, and a turn call. I think a probable holding here is King-Queen-Jack-X, Ace-Queen-Jack-X, or even Queen-Jack-9-X, which is really bad news because Queen-Jack is the river nuts. I don't want to sound like a poker book here, but this is one of those instances where I've got to calculate what the percentage of hands I can beat and how many times I have to be correct to make this call. Of course, there hasn't been a bet yet, so I have a secondary question. Do I make that bet and hope that there's some lesser hand that calls, or do I simply check, assuming that I'm going to call or fold? Well, the second question first, I think if you're going to play this to the river, you're not going to check call, you're going to bet. And the reason is you may get a flush to call where if you check, the flush is going to check behind. So if you're going to showdown, you'll might as well ship in the 28 big bets knowing that a flush will make a mistake with a call. But now to the $1 million question, do you have him beat? You know, it's funny, I was just debating this with somebody. Do you call when you think you're beat but the math justifies it? Or do you fold when you're sure you're beat because you're sure you're beat? And how sure exactly is sure? Well, I look at it this way. This is Omaha, where people show down the monsters, and you're just not going to be that surprised to see Queen Jack. I'm finding it particularly hard to lay down hands when I know I got rivered, and this is no exception. Because it's a cash game, and because I just can't stand the thought of it, I'm going to chip it in and shake my head at the Ace of Clubs, Queen of Hearts, Three of Spades, Jack of Clubs.
You knew that was coming, sir.
Until next time, this is Colombo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you, when you're rivered, you're rivered.
Wow. We were only rivered, though. That's the thing, you know, when the jack comes on the river, and he makes an interesting point, too, where he's had this discussion before. Do you call because the math dictates it, even though you know you're beat, or do you fold and save that money? Even though you know you're, you know, you know you're beat, but you know you do have a full house here. You got like the fourth nuts or whatever it is. So, yeah, I'm terribly sorry that you started with this hand. You should have listened to Scott. But yeah, I probably would have paid him off on the end to watch him turn over Queen Jack.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is you got into the situation where you had you ended up with you got lucky enough to improve to a boat with it fairly cheaply and then you kind of stuck.
Brutal.
Yeah.
You knew it was coming, though.
Yep.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Chris, you know, we always like to have big poker pros on the show, but what's even better than that is having a big poker pro that has good Florida connections. And today's guest, PokerStars pro, Lady Maverick herself, Vanessa Russo, joins us. Vanessa, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Vanessa, you just celebrated your 26th birthday, I think. So, a belated happy birthday to you.
Wow, you've done your homework. Yes, I did celebrate my birthday a couple of days ago, and thanks for the happy birthday. Although this
Excellent.
Birthday kind of sucks. It's the first birthday that I have nothing really good to celebrate. Like, at least last year, I could celebrate that I could finally rent a car, which is actually useful for me because I travel so much that I need to rent a car a lot. But this year, there's just nothing to celebrate. I was, like, kind of bummed.
You know, that's hilarious because I said the same thing when I turned 25, and then I guess the next milestone is, like, what, 50, when you can be getting an art membership or something?
Right. That's what I was saying. My next big thing is, like, retirement benefits. Wow.
All right, well, you started playing poker when you were 5 years old, I believe, and so that means you've been playing poker for more than 20 years now. Does it seem like it's been that long?
No, definitely not, because, I mean, you know, I'm just a normal person in a lot of ways. You know, yes, I'm a professional poker player, but before the last 3 years, you know, I did poker the same way your everyday girl does, you know, with her family, you know, at the local casino, whatever. And so it was, you know, it was a hobby in my life for a long time. And so certainly I haven't kept up over 20 years at the pace that I have for the last three. But yeah, it is pretty cool that, you know, I took something that was a hobby for ever since I was a little kid and managed to somehow make it into my profession.
Hey, you know, most of our listeners probably don't know this, but you were born in New York, and then you lived in Paris until you were like 10. And now you have dual citizenship in France and America. Do you have any, like, memories, any fond memories of the City of Lights? And do you ever go back there?
Yeah, actually, you know, believe it or not, poker has brought me back there quite a few times. I just got back a couple weeks ago from the European Poker Tour event in Deauville, France. And in order to get there, the only way you can get there is to fly into Paris and take a train from Paris to Deauville or rent a car. But I don't like to drive in foreign countries, so I did the train route. And so I was just in Paris a couple weeks ago. And I've also been to a WPT event they had at the Aviation Club a couple years back. And then I fly through Paris every year when I go to the EPT event in Monte Carlo. So believe it or not, I get back to Paris at least two times a year, pretty much, for the last 3 years. And I love going back. It's very nostalgic for me. You know, I get to speak one of my maternal languages, or it's not maternal. What's the word? I think it is. What's the word that I'm looking for? Your first language.
Native? No.
Native language. Well, no, but it's not native.
Because you're born here.
I don't know. There's a word for it, and in French, it's maternelle, and so but maternal doesn't translate very well into English.
Your mother tongue, right?
I don't know what English word for it is.
It's your mother tongue.
Mother tongue. See, it was related to maternal. Yes. See, you put three heads together and you get something. Yes, my mother tongue. And so that's always cool. And, you know, I feel like a cultural connection to it and love the food out there. And so, I'm lucky that poker manages to take me there a couple times a year. One of the 23 places that I've lived in my life.
I'm 23.
Wow.
All right, so Vanessa, after you were a valedictorian here at Wellington High here in Florida, you went on to Duke on a scholarship. While there, you majored in economics and minored in poli-sci, but you also studied game theory, and I know that's a big thing for you. So tell us a little bit more about game theory and how you used it at the poker table.
Game theory is not as it initially may sound. You know, it's not like we just, you know, play Monopoly and Scrabble all day. it's actually pretty scientific and mathematical in nature. Formally, the definition is it's the study of strategic decision making. What that really means is it takes complex, human-involved, real-world situations and breaks them down into mathematical form, or we use variables and other, like, scientific stuff. Like, you know, we use equations, we use variables, and the reason we do that is to try to simplify otherwise extraordinarily complex things like human behavior and human emotions and things like that. And the purpose of which is to optimize behavior or find the best way to act in a given situation with given payoffs for different courses of action. And this sort of analysis actually applies to a wide array of things in life, like, everything from whether or not a country should arm itself up with nuclear weapons to, you know, whether a baseball pitcher should pitch to the upper left quadrant or the lower right, to the mating rituals of chimpanzees, which I wrote a paper on in one of my game theory classes at Duke, wow. And obviously poker, which is a very, very dynamic game. And, in poker, how we use game theory is very complex, but to kind of give you an overview, break down different variables, like, for instance, the tendency of a person to bluff. That can actually be, you can, let's say, it's 0 to 1, with 0 being he'll never bluff and 1 being he'll always bluff. Well, you know, usually people fall on some spectrum in between there, and then having that information will help affect your decision, given, you know, the amount of chips it takes, you know, to call that person's bet, given how many chips are in the pot, should you call and win, given how many chips are in your stack, and how much it'll hurt your stack to lose the amount of chips you need to call here, and given the amount of chips in your stack and how much it'll help you should you win this pot in by calling this guy. And also we try to include in the equation, things like how it affects your image, should you call, and then show that, like, you end up, in order to call and win the hand, you have to show that you actually raised before the flop with 3-5 suited. So there's some detrimental effects to your image, even though you'll end up winning the pot. And those kind of things are factored in also. And so there's just, there's honestly a million different things, and it kind of gets complex. But what I do is I actually teach game theory and poker seminars, and be doing a tour of Florida of those clinics coming up in the next couple of months. And so if people are interested, that's something they should definitely check out.
Wow. You know, Scott, I think we should have
agreed, right?
we should have talked to Vanessa before we launched this magazine. I think she could have helped us out a little bit here. Hey, Vanessa, you know, Scott brought up Duke, and I know you got your degree in 2.5 years, and you like to finish things in half the amount of time that it normally takes to
like
do things.
Like this interview, right? How fast I talk?
Well, does that translate to your poker game? Like, do you sometimes play hands too fast or react too fast because you like to do things so quickly?
That's a good question. You know, I never really thought about that. That's actually the first time anyone's asked me that. But I think you've touched on probably something that has some validity. I would say sometimes I may act too quickly. In fact, that's probably why I got knocked out last year of the 25K WPT event in Bellagio. I made a decision in haste that I was so upset with myself afterwards because I came into day two with so many chips, and I was out 15 minutes later on just a huge mistake that if I had taken 10 more seconds to think, I would have realized how it was that I couldn't have the best hand in this situation, and I would have folded and not called the guys all in. And instead, I just impulsively called too quickly. And obviously that can be a downside. It's also could be an upside sometimes that, you know, my ability to think really quickly allows me to incorporate a lot of variables into each decision that I make at the poker table without being a jerk and taking an hour for every decision. But yeah, I should probably be careful and take my time a little more often. So I'm glad you pointed that out. That actually is a leak in my game.
Awesome. That's what we're here for, to fine-tune pros, poker players'
games.
That's
a leak in my game.
Okay, so Vanessa, the poker world obviously knows you as one of PokerStars' signature players, but also knows you as Lady Maverick. So for our listeners who don't know how you got that nickname, can you let us know?
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Maverick or not, but
yeah.
In Maverick, the main player, the main character sells shares in himself to go play the World Championship main event, which I think was 20,000 in the movie or something. Believe it or not, that's how I played my first big main event in 2006, the 25K Bellagio, the one I ended up getting seventh in. At that point, 25,000 was way too much for my bankroll to go play. But I had this pipe dream. I was like, all right, I'm going to take a shot. I want to do this. So I went and sold shares of myself to, like, shares for between $100 and $1,000 a piece. So I had to sell a bunch of shares to friends and family and in hopes of, you know, heading out there and doing well. And I ended up doing well out there and returning 10-1 on each investor's investment
awesome.
Because of the $250,000 that I won on return of 25,000 buy-in. So that's 10-1. And So then when I came back from that, one of my dad's friends actually said to me, what are you, the Lady Maverick of poker? And he told me this story, reminded me, you know, the one from the movie Maverick, and I kind of just thought it fit, so that's how I got it.
That's awesome.
Now, this year you also started an around-the-world video blog on PokerStars.tv. How many destinations are you planning on hitting?
I mean, I just hit so many with them. They keep me running. I mean, in the last year, I think I've been on, I mean, 5 continents with them. It's crazy.
Wow.
Everywhere from Australia to Russia, all over Europe, Canada, the U.S., the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos, Uruguay, so in South America. I mean, it's just nuts. I'm all over. In the next year or so, let's see where I will be. Well, the next out-of-country place I'm going is San Remo in Monte Carlo at the end of April. And then I'll be heading to Uruguay again, actually, believe it or not, soon. And then I will be going to New Zealand this year. And they haven't told me yet what the new Asia-Pacific Poker Tour stops are. Once they tell me, I'll know which one I'm going to. And let's see where else I'll be going. Oh, it's just, I mean, honestly, I never really knew until the month before, but you can be rest assured it'll be an eclectic mix of destinations.
All right, well, Scott brought up Poker Stars, and I have to know this now. In your Poker Stars commercial, it shows you bungee jumping. And at first I was like, that is not her. But then I realized you do bungee jumping and you skydived. So is that actually you in the commercial? Did you actually put yourself out there for that commercial?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, right? But the reason they chose that theme was because that's an aspect of my personality that they knew about. I love adrenaline junkie type of stuff like that. And I've been bungee jumping a ton of times and I've been skydiving twice. I love it. I'm actually looking. I was going to go skydiving today, believe it or not, but couldn't fit it in. I was so busy. I just love crazy stuff like that.
All right, so I guess that answers my next question. I was going to ask you if you're an adrenaline junkie.
Yes. That would be your only short answer.
Now, Vanessa, obviously the new Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition came out this week, and of course you're in it this year. Were you nervous doing that shoot? Was it something you were looking forward to?
Well, I mean, sure, any girl would be nervous. That's pretty much like a girl's worst nightmare. You're having their picture taken of them in a bikini, it's, you know, pretty scary. But, you know, I'm really thankful to PokerStars for getting me that opportunity. You know, they told me about 3 weeks before I had to do the photo shoot that they had been working with Sports Illustrated on this special piece that they were going to include in the issue, and that they wanted me in a bikini to go with the theme of the issue, and they would write an article, and they would also include one of my PokerStars ads on an adjacent page and all this stuff. So it was a pretty exciting opportunity, but you can bet that I hightailed my butt to them right after that phone call, and I worked out like once or twice a day every day to shoot for 3 weeks. So I really was happy to, you know, have a reason for once, given that I'm a poker player and I sit on my butt all day, to go to the gym with such consistency and really focus on being healthy. And so for me, that was a really good outcome from the shoot. While it sucked to have to, you know, stand there while the photographer's taking pictures of my bikini, you know, it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. I was thankful for it, and you know, I'm happy that it all came to fruition, and I'm happy with the results, and it was all good.
All right, are you going to be happy now with the onslaught of fans that are going to show up at a poker tournament with a magazine asking you to sign it?
I'm laid back about that kind of stuff. It's really no big deal. I don't mind at all.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about poker now. You know, your biggest poker cash came on Stars with more than $700,000 in the 2007 WCOOP main event. That's a pretty nice payday, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely cannot complain about that one.
Now, is it true that you played the final table of a WSOPC event in your in AC in your bathrobe?
This is true. Yeah.
You have to tell us that story.
Yeah, it was crazy. I woke up that morning and I was running late. I actually woke up 10 minutes into the start of the day, and I had one of my friends with me, and I called him up and I was like, all right, do I show up late and miss some hands, or do I just like throw in a bathrobe and head down there and like just wing it? First he thought I was kidding, and then he's like, go for it. He's like, but add a cowboy hat and boots for effect. And so I did, and it was just It was so funny. I mean, these guys did not know what to do with me at the table. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad I did it. It was, another once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Sorry, guys. It won't be happening again. It was, it was just kind of a random occurrence based on, the fact that I was running so late and I didn't want to miss the hands. And I ended up going on to win $20,000 that day, so
awesome.
It was pretty cool.
Well, you obviously gained some notoriety from that, and you've had a lot of success, so you've become very famous as well, but you're still relatively new to the poker world. You know, and I saw you once on a Poker After Dark episode where you were just so nervous and chatty. Do you still get nervous at all when you play?
No, not at all. I mean, it was actually, that I'm never nervous really when I play. I actually feel really, really comfortable at the poker table. You could probably tell just from talking to me that I'm just if you encourage me to talk, then I'm pretty talkative person. And the thing is, those producers for the show had just had feedback that they needed to get more conversation on Poker After Dark. So they asked us to talk more on the show. So I tried to talk more. And obviously it came off like I was pretty chatty, and it was like cringe to watch. I hated it. But you can see on the next two Poker After Darks where I was a lot more focused, I actually won them both back to back, and I didn't really talk too much at all.
Well, one time when I did see you talk was in an interview where you described yourself as a fluid poker player. What did you mean by that?
I think what I meant at that time was that, you can't really peg me as having a certain image or style, that I'm kind of like a chameleon, that I will quickly shift between styles at the table based on adjusting to things that happen. Like, for instance, say I just got caught in a bluff and I had been playing really loose until that point. Well, now I'm going to adjust and I can quickly play a lot tighter because I know that I'm not going to be getting the credit that I was before because I just had to show a bluff down. And, so I'm constantly adjusting based on what happens at the table, my the frequency with which I play hands, and, I'm trying to play different styles of poker.
Okay.
Vanessa, there's obviously a big debate among female poker players over ladies-only events and whether they are good or not. What is your opinion on them?
Yeah, I don't know why people get so riled up about them, to be honest. I'm kind of like a laissez-faire, if it makes people happy to have ladies' events, go for it. It doesn't affect me or bother me. I'm not, those events don't particularly appeal to me. The prize pools are a little too small, the starting chips are a little too small, and the structure's a little too fast for my taste. But for a lot of women who are less comfortable than I am, just sitting down with a bunch of guys at the table, it's a great way for them to segue into the world of poker and, try it in a more comfortable setting through these events. And I get that, and I think it's great that we have those for them, and I don't really see why we shouldn't. I get this question a lot because, there's another female pro who I won't say her name on here, but she's, everyone knows that she is, like, out against these female-only tournaments. And me, honestly, if it makes people happy, go for it.
Well, I was going to ask you what you would do to alter them if you wanted to, but it sounds like, if somebody put together a pretty nice payday and made it a good televised event, that might do it for you, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if they had a $10,000 buy-in ladies-only event, I would definitely, definitely be there. A $5,000 buy-in, if they ran satellites to get female qualifiers in, that would be a great event for me. Obviously, there's not too many female pros. There's only, a handful of us, so the tournament would be pretty small unless they ran satellites. I think the women's tournaments could definitely benefit from better structures and more chips for sure.
Okay, that concludes part one of our interview with the Lady Maverick, Vanessa Russo. Stay tuned next week for part two.
Hey, this is AJ Benzer.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gallen.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wasikin.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, we've got a big Pot Limit Omaha tournament coming up on Wednesday.
That's true.
Apes Event 2, which we mentioned before. And so we've got a lot of Pot Limit Omaha hands coming in through Annie Up headquarters this week. And so we picked one here because so we can get a little extra education
as we go into the Big Money Apes event.
It's almost like we planned it.
Exactly. It's almost like we planned it, but everybody knows we don't plan well. So, this comes from Chad, also known as Own the Dream.
Nice name.
Yeah. You know, it's actually one of my favorite names. And then on PokerStars this week, I realized I found somebody that actually had a name that had a profanity in it. Did they let that?
Ooh.
It was by this turd, except it wasn't turd. It was another four-letter word for it that has an S and a T and an I and an H in the middle of it.
Shiitake mushrooms?
Yeah, exactly. That might be it.
Wow.
His picture wasn't offensive, but that's kind of weird, wasn't it?
By this turd.
But Own the Dream. I don't even know what it means, but it just sounds inspiring, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
All right, so here we go. We are playing, this is a Omaha Pot Limit cash game, not a tournament, so a little different, game on PokerStars. It's a penny to penny.
Sweet.
You're kind of levels.
That's what I play.
Yeah, you dominate.
I clean up, too. Yep. I dominate them.
All right, well, our hero here has $4.62. He's in a pretty good spot here. There's only two players at the table that have more than him on the table. And he is in the small blind, this hand. And by the way, Own the Dream, I appreciate you color-coding all this. Makes it far easier as I'm going through when Chris asked me a question that I should know, and I don't, and then I don't have to fish through.
That's what the Annie Up Nation's here for, Scott. They're here for your convenience.
All right, so we get three folds, and then a guy raises to a nickel, raises a nickel to 7 cents. All right, so a big 5x raise there, or sort of like that, two and a half. Yep. And then it's folded around to our hero here in the small blind who looks down at ace of spades, queen of clubs, nine of spades, nine of hearts.
Well, we have a suited ace, we have Broadway cards, we have middle straight cards, and we have a pair. I can make an argument for all kinds of things. I can make an argument for folding, calling, and raising. But to isolate, but I think that I probably would just call and speculate here for a nickel. Or, well, a little more than that because we're in a small blind. But I would probably call.
All right. And you know what? I think I initially told him I would fold, which I think is a borderline.
Uh-huh.
But I am going to fold here just because I don't like being in the small blind in Pot Limit Omaha. Again, as Columbo said. You know, we got the suited ace, which is nice. I mean, this is a much stronger hand
much
than Columbo had.
Yeah, much better.
But, you know, 5 cents, I got to put in another six to see, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is not a lot. But, you know, when you're playing these limits, you got to tailor your game for the limits. You can't just play because
you can't just go to 6 cents.
Yeah,
I understand.
Exactly.
Six cents to 6 cents, but to win 9 cents, so not good pot odds.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, it's Pot Limit Omaha. Every hand is a favorite. So,
I'm gonna
obviously speculate and call here to play along with our hero. Otherwise, it'd be a short hand of the week. So, I'm gonna call.
All right, I'm gonna fold, but I can understand calling. So, all right. So we call, and the big blind calls. So three of us to the flop of nine of diamonds, five of hearts, two of diamonds.
Sweet top set.
All right. See, then when you get a set, you want the top set.
That is sweet.
But a little danger here. We got a possible flush draw and a possible straight draw. Actually, a couple straight draws.
Yeah, two straight draws.
And we're first act.
Yeah, you know, I guess I wish I knew what the guy who raised preflop played like.
Because
if I knew he was going to automatically bet with his aces, you know, which is also probably has a suited ace, you know, of diamonds. But, I think if I knew he was going to bet, I'd check. But since I can't know that just sitting in the studio, I'll probably bet pot 20 cents or so.
Yep.
Just because I want to get the big blind out. And then if the diamonds don't get there.
Here's the thing is that we have top set. So we have the best hand right now.
Yeah.
But we have no redraws.
No, we have nothing to redraw to. Nothing.
Except
the redraw to a boat. But that's
true.
Really.
And a flush draw and two straight draws. I just want to get out of this quickly if I can, and if not, make these people pay dearly to catch up to me.
Yeah, see, like I said, if I knew the guy who raised preflop was going to bet, I'd check and take the chance of making a really big pot and getting a big blind out.
That's true.
But I don't know that since we're here, so I'm just going to bet out pot, see what happens.
All right, that's what I'm going to do to our hero, however, decides to check.
He may have information that we don't know.
Exactly. The big blind actually now bets out 14 cents.
Oh, that's good.
Yep, so that's what, 7...
34 cents.
14, yeah, 20 or so. A little two-thirds of the pot, probably.
Oh, yeah, it's exactly 2/3 of the pot. Yeah. I just didn't know what you meant the total pot was going to be. So the pot's about 34 cents now. I don't know what the rake's going to be for this. So
right. And so it gets down to our initial raiser who just smooth calls.
Okay, well, now we pot it.
Yeah, so it gets back to us, and that's exactly what our hero does, raises 63 cents to 77 cents. Whew, that's a lot of pennies.
That's a lot of pennies.
Of course, you got to do that now, right?
Oh, yeah. You got the best hand possible, and you know you got two guys who are coming along. They're clearly someone has a draw here. And they probably both do. Maybe someone has middle set. So I'm popping it again.
And you know, before we get any farther, this is the one thing I worry about here. You have to do what you have to do here. But now we're up against two people drawing with three draws out there.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we would have bet pot if one of these two guys might have got out of the way.
Yeah, but it's only 6 more cents. The guy bet 14 and the guy called. Okay. So I
that's true.
It.
All right.
I doubt it.
We raise, the big blind calls, but the initial raiser is out of the hand now.
Okay, so we're heads up. That's good.
The turn is the three of hearts.
All right, so a wheel got there. But
yep.
You know, if the guy has 2-6 in his hand after a raise and, you know.
Actually, it'd be ace-4.
Or a raise-4.
Or 4-6.
That's what I said, 4-6. Did I say 4-6 in his hand?
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Yeah. But there's also ace-4, which is more likely because it could be suited.
Could be suited ace. That's I don't know. I'm not afraid of that.
All right, you're not afraid.
Not afraid.
All right, so you're going to bet out here?
Yeah, I'm going to bet half the pot.
All right. Our hero bets $1.84.
Oh, okay, so that's like pot.
Yeah.
Roughly.
And you just get smooth called.
Okay, well, there's not much money left. I mean, these guys only started with $4.
So. Yeah, I think our the villain started here with $3.52, so...
Now we pray to the poker gods to pair the board. Pardon my alliteration.
Yeah, because so let's pause here. I think you're right. You have to call here because you still got what you think might be the best hand, and you got some outs. The fact that he's just calling after he raised is kind of weird to me.
It is kind of weird. But again, it could be a set.
I mean, I guess I can't put him on a straight now, right? Because I think a straight probably would have...
He would have
repopped.
Repopped it because he didn't want to lose it to a flush.
Unless he's got the flush backup.
That's true, too. He could have that ace-4 of diamonds.
This is why Omaha is so cool.
Yeah.
Because you got all this layered stuff that you just can't figure out.
Fantastic.
All right, the river's the four of hearts.
Boo.
Yeah.
All kinds of straights get there now.
Yeah, and a flush. All right, so we didn't improve, obviously, and we're very vulnerable here, I think. So are we in a check call or check fold?
If it's a big enough bet, I'm probably check folding. I mean, it's four straight cards in a row there, essentially.
Yeah.
Four wheel cards. I'm out of this hand if he bets big.
Gotcha. All right. Well, actually, our hero goes ahead and puts our opponent all in with 84 cents.
Oh, well, I didn't know there's only 84 cents left. Yeah. I can't fold for 84 cents now, I don't think. Wow. Yeah.
Again, that's a 1-2 game. That's 42 big bets there.
But the pot is like $3, $4.
Yeah.
So I'm getting 5-1 on my money with the top set. I'm sorry. I didn't know the guy 84 cents.
All right, let's think of it. It's like a 1-2 game. It'd be like $84. Wow. Yeah. All right, okay. I'm just thinking, you know. Cause
well, it's a 1-2 game. I have $500 in front of me to start the hand. Right, I play it a little differently.
Well, I know. That's what I'm getting at is these penny two-penny games. I just I can't play them. I know you play them and other people play them, but that's the problem is I don't think I could ever reconcile my mind whether I'm getting the proper odds or if I'm just, getting...
I just couldn't fold an $84 bet
right?
For a $400 pot.
That's true. So, that's true.
$500 pot. So, all right. So, we put them all in. Yep. Of course, he calls, and he has a better hand.
And he has a 5 of diamonds, 2 of clubs, 6 of clubs, 2 of spades. So, he has a straight deuce to 6, but he did flop bottom set.
Bottom set. So, he got runner to make his hand.
Plus one of the fives, too. So,
man, he had it crippled.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. Talk about getting screwed. God, it reminds me of apes.
So, it's him, 2-6. Wow, yeah. See, that's the thing. He got caught in with the bottom set.
Yeah, went runner for him.
And
3-4.
Then, then you got lucky. But see, you can't play that way.
Double gutter.
Exactly.
Double guts. He filled the double guts up. That's brutal. Runner to take the... Because he would have made a ton of money had it not done that, because he would have set over set.
See, now I'm sure that a pot-sized bet from our hero on the flop probably would not have gotten this guy out with bottom set. It would have, however, probably gotten me out. That's one tip I'm going to give folks for apes is you're not going to catch me overplaying bottom set.
Here's the thing, too, is pre-flop, it was raised to 7 cents. and then we called.
Well, that's a very good point.
And
yeah.
The guy called with 5226.
Six. Yeah, that's I mean, terrible.
I mean, I guess he's getting...
It's not high-low, and even high-low, that would be a bad call. Wow.
You know, he had to call, what, 5 cents to win... What was in the pot at that point? 14, 15? 15,
yeah,
14. So he's getting 3-1 his money
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, 16, yep.
So, I mean, I guess so, but if you do flop set, it has to
no,
be
but,
a bottom
yeah.
set.
You're going to have to flop straight is where you went there. You don't want the set.
Yeah.
And you don't want the flush either. I mean, you get 6-high flush. That's not going to be good.
And see, that's what you're dealing with at those levels. So, yeah, I can understand why people don't play those levels because they're coming up against people who call raises with 5-2-2-6. You know? I mean, I guess it happens in bigger levels too, but really, at that, that's pretty sad. Sorry, man. Let's spin the wheel. Cheer you up.
Yeah. All right. On the dream, you get the lovely Complete Idiot's Guide to Casino Comps from Penguin Books.
Now he does own the dream because that is a dreamy book.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna get. You're gonna find out how to game the system there, and you know, get kicked out of casinos for playing too much video poker.
And if you learn anything from this book, let us know. Drop us an email because we didn't take the time to read it. So
I thumbed through it. It's very good. It's a quick read.
Excellent.
But send us your address, Chad. Own the dream, and we'll get that right out to you. And remember, everybody else, send your hand of the week to podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Scott, it's great to be back in the warmer climates.
It
the
is.
Southern hemisphere of the United States. And glad that you're back safe, didn't drown. Glad that you know, Laura didn't push you over the railing and collect the insurance money. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@annieupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.